why our mother had been arrested in the first place. She said the police were really after the two who had been arrested with her. She also said our mother helped to spread the word by volunteering her printing services. "Information is power," she told me, as if we were having a lesson. "Keeping the people informed keeps the people empowered." Cecile wasn't exactly like Hirohito's father, going around spreading the word and telling the truth. She fussed about printing anything other than her poetry. I didn't tell Sister Mukumbu that. And honestly, I believe she said that about Inzila giving power to the people to make me feel good about seeing my mother being taken away in handcuffs. Crazy Kelvin held up his fist and said, "Stay strong, my black sisters. Hold your heads up." Bonetta gave him the power sign back, but Fern pointed at him and said, "What's wrong with this picture?" He laughed like Fern was a silly little girl. To someone Kelvin's age, she was just that, a silly little girl. To his chuckle, Fern said, "Good boy, Fido." Then she barked. Bonetta and I were embarrassed and puzzled by Fern's calling Kelvin out like he was a dog and then barking at him. I pulled her away. Fern laughed and hummed her bus song. "I saw something," and clapped her hands. After we practiced being led to freedom by Janice Engton as Harriet Tubman, Sister Mukumbu announced we would do community work. We would take Sister Nzila's flyers out into the community and ask store owners to display them in their windows. Each of us had to present ourselves to the manager or owner. We were to be respectful and clear. "Good afternoon. We're from the People's Center summer camp and are participating in the People's Rally. We're asking you to help the people of your community by displaying our flyer for the People's Rally this Saturday." Older kids, like Eunice, Hirohito, and me, also included information about free sickle cell anemia testing, voter registration, free shoes for the poor, supporting Huey Newton, and changing the park's name to the Bobby Hutton Park. If store managers said yes, we were to thank them and tape a flyer to their window. If they said no, we were to leave just as respectfully as we came. "Heads up high, walking tall," Sister Mukumbu said. Hirohito was up first. He went to St. Augustine's Church and gave his presentation to a priest who seemed to know. Hirohito had it easy. The priest seemed to be only too happy to take Hirohito's flyer. It figured. The church served free breakfasts and gave away bags of food to poor people. They were, as Sister Pat might say, down with the cause, or as Huey might say, carrying the weight. Still, Hirohito congratulated himself as he rejoined the group. I was supposed to ask Mean Lady Ming, but I knew she would say yes to me. I said, "Fern, Mean Lady Ming likes you. Go get her." I followed behind her but kept my distance. Fern couldn't remember all of her speech, but what she had said was good enough. "Good afternoon, Mean Lady Ming. We would like to put the people's flyer in your window for the people's rally this Saturday. Free Huey. Power to the people." Mean Lady Ming wasn't rankled by the name Fern called her. Her complaints, all in Chinese, sounded just like her complaints about customers who wanted extra duck sauce or a free egg roll. That didn't stop her from taking Fern's flyer and taping it up in the window. Vonetta and Janice Engton approached the Shabazz Bakery together. Another easy presentation. The bakery had pictures of Malcolm X and Black Power slogans on the wall. It didn't matter to either Vonetta or Janice. They both came out of the bakery waving their arms like home run hitters. Black, white, Mexican, or Chinese. Big stores, little stores. Some shook their heads north and south. Some shook their heads east and west. There were others who, in the middle of our presentations, simply pointed us to the door. In those cases especially, Sister Mukumbu praised us for how well we presented ourselves and for how we left, respectfully, with our heads held high. Both Eunice and I went for the harder ones. stores of the no-sayers, places where we weren't guaranteed a listen or a smile. We'd both heard no before. The hardened looks of grown-ups who didn't like kids or black people or kids who were black were nothing new to us. After Eunice's third no, Sister Mukumbu pulled her aside for a little chat. Eunice had a hip-switching way about her walk that would have gotten me spoken to but good by Big Ma. When the store manager said no, Eunice would say, "Thank you anyway," the same way we'd say, "Forget you, forgot you," on the playground. Then she'd walk her hip-switching walk on out of their store. I said I would go into the Safeway store and find the manager. Surely the grocery store workers had seen my sisters and me skipping through the aisles with our basket. I went up to the manager and said in my cheeriest voice, "Good afternoon. I'm from the People's Center Summer Camp, and I buy dinner groceries at this store." I threw that one in there for good measure. Just as I was telling him about the rally and how good it would be for the community, he said no and something about it being against store policy. But he did look friendly. He did smile and thank us for shopping at Safeway. I had no hips to swish away with. Instead, my long legs carried me down the produce aisle, past the bread aisle, and out of Safeway. I'd been keeping a list of the East-West no-sayers and put Safeway at the very top of it. My sisters, Cecile and I, would eat egg rolls, white rice, bean pies, and fried fish before we spent another penny in the stores of the no-sayers. Glorious Hill. I didn't know which was weirder, having Hirohito see me in my pajamas or not having any chores to do. I tried to wash dishes and always offered to mop the floor. But for the fifth day in a row, Mrs. Wood said, "Go outside, play." I felt like a watcher while Hirohito chased Vonetta and Fern around. I sat on the porch with my book in my lap, glad I'd brought it along. In between turning pages, I'd peek at Vonetta, Fern, and Hirohito playing Mother May I or Freeze Tag. He knew just how to escape their tags and keep the game going. I could see why Hirohito put up with Vonetta and Janice at the center, why he let Fern chase him and tag him it when she wasn't fast enough to catch him. Hirohito had no brothers or sisters. He liked being a brother to my sisters and me. Grateful that Hirohito would soon tire his sisters out, I settled into my book on the porch. I could finish the chapter before it was time to come inside. I read my book, bright-eyed, breathing heavily, and rooted for Rontu to win against the pack of wild dogs, his former brothers. "Get 'em, Rontu, get 'em." I didn't hear the quiet, but the sounds of playing in the yard had stopped. I looked up, and they were all standing around me with Hirohito's go-kart. "Hey, Delphine." Vonetta and Fern giggled. Obviously, they were a part of Hirohito's plan to sneak up on me. He smiled, pleased to have caught me unaware. "Want to try out my go-kart?" I rolled my eyes and tried to appear older, above playing kid games. "Me? On that thing?" Vonetta and Fern started screaming that they wanted a ride. He tapped my sneaker with one of his doggedy high tops. "It's fun. You'll like it." Before this week, I would have said, "How do you know what I'd like?" My goal to come off bored and older slipped right out from under me. Inside, I felt like I was being pulled onto the sixth grade dance floor. I wanted to give him my hand and let him pull me up, but I felt too big. Tree-limbed, plain-faced. I'd probably look silly on that go-kart, just like I'd look silly matching steps with some boy in the multi-purpose room at school. I glanced down at that sawed-off piece of wood resting on top of a metal frame with skate wheels up front, tricycle wheels in the back, a rope on one end, a carpet square on the other. I'd never seen Hirohito sit on the carpet square. He always rode belly down, arms spread out, and hands gripping the T-bar. It was a wonder he wasn't all scarred up. "Boy, you must be crazy." "Stop being chicken. You can steer it. Those legs will reach the turn bar easy. Just hold on to the rope and keep it steady." Bonetta and Fern snickered at Hirohito's carefree choice of words. I couldn't hit him for calling me a long-legged chicken after I'd gobbled down his mother's fish and rice. I said, I am not getting on your street roller. No way. Instead of saying, not on your street roller coaster, or, yeah, no way, Jose, my sister's voices failed to come to my rescue. Instead, Vonetta and Fern, mostly Vonetta, screamed and danced around us, pleading to take my turn on the go-kart. Hirohito shook his head, sorely disappointed, like he was Papa. I didn't think you were scared, Delphine. I am not scared of that thing. My voice hit notes it was not known for reaching. Then come on. No, chicken. I am not. He offered the rope to me and patted the carpet seat. Just a block, not even a hill. I couldn't let him think I was weak and scared. Girl pride and the lower voice said, I'm not afraid of no hill. Before I knew it, we had become a merry parade. Me sitting on the go-kart, my feet on the bars, Hirohito behind me pushing, and Vonetta and Fern at the rear, parading up Magnolia Street. What a sight! I sat hunched over, holding onto the rope, my big sneakers on the turn bar. All I could do was wrap the rope tighter around my hands and pray. How could I find my balance, let alone trust it? Surely balance was needed to ride on that rolling cart of danger. Where was my good common sense? The common sense that Big Ma always pointed out I was born with. I was mad at myself for letting this happen. Letting them push me into riding down some hill on this wooden, bumpy, hot rod roller. I could fall over on my butt. Scrape every inch of skin on my legs, arms, and hands. I could look a stupid, scraped up, tangled up mess, and on top of it all, scream like a fraidy cat in front of my sisters. I hugged the rope. My heart pounded through my ears, down in my toes. None of that concerned anyone on the parade route. Hirohito pushed happily. My sisters skipped, clapped, and sang. They might as well have been singing, Crash, Delphine, crash! Then Hirohito stopped pushing. Now the tips of my fingers pounded. We were at the top, the very, very top of the hill. Hirohito looked at me like this was all fine, not like he was getting me back for being mean to him. My knees would knock if they weren't frozen. I wanted to get up and walk away. Don't worry, it's safe, he said. My dad built it. It's sturdy and has no splinters. He sanded it down for days. Good job, right? Right, I said. I helped him. He turned the T-part so it swiveled. Real axle for the turns. It's good for racing. But don't worry, he said again. You just have to go straight. Keep it steady. He nodded and smiled. My dad's great. I doubted he meant to get all girly talking about his father. He caught himself and changed his voice. Ready, Delphine? I didn't answer. He said, Use your sneakers to slow down, then stop. Just drag. Then he lifted my foot and put it in the right position. The position that would turn the heels of my sneakers as doggedy as his. Remember, you don't have to steer. It's a straight ride down. Just slide your sneaker like this. He moved my foot slightly sideways. It was a wonder he had soles at all. He told me to hold on tight. Then he ordered Vonetta and Fern to come on as if he had taken my place as the oldest. Part of me didn't like it one bit. The other part didn't have time to think about that. Push! Vonetta and Fern screamed, Yay! And I looked up, mad, scared, thrilled. I felt six hands on my back and the bumpy ground beneath me. With all that rumbling, my head spun with the sheer craziness of it all. Being pushed down the street, my sisters and Hirohito cheering and pushing and letting go and time not ticking but racing away. It was too late to jump off while the go-kart rolled. its steel skate wheels hitting every bump and pebble on the sidewalk. I leaned left and right, trying to find my balance. Then forward, left, right, and forward, my drawn-up knees helping to keep me steady. There was a curve in the sidewalk, not exactly straight like Hirohito told me. To me, it was windy and dangerous, like the Chinatown Dragon. As the go-kart went faster, I felt the rumbling of the wheels hitting the concrete underneath me. I screamed, so loud I startled myself. I never heard myself scream. Scream from the top of my lungs, from the pit of my heart. Scream like I was snaking and falling. Screamed and hiccuped and laughed like my sisters. Like I was having the time of my life flying down that glorious hill. Bonetta, Fern, and Hirohito had run after me, but Hirohito had outrun my sisters and met me at the other end. When we were all together, Hirohito led the parade of him, Bonetta, and Fern, hooting and dancing around me. The third thing. Who would have thought 20 flyers could have brought more than 1,000 people to the park? Talk about a grand Negro. Well, a grand black spectacle. People simply came, filling up every inch of green in the park. Some even climbed oak trees and perched in branches for a good spot. Everywhere you turned, there were college students in t-shirts signing people up for sickle cell anemia testing and voter registration. Black Panthers from around the country in sky blue t-shirts with pictures of Black Panthers on them stood tall, patrolling the park. Policemen also stood tall, holding on to their wooden clubs. And yet, I wasn't afraid. I was excited. "You see?" Sister Mukumbu said, waving her bangled arm like a wand over the hundreds of people, maybe 1,000. I feel ashamed of the pride I take in ironing a crease extra sharp. Ironing a sharp crease is a job well done. Bringing people to this rally was magic that had you soaring above trees. It certainly was worth marching up to the no-sayers. In my mind, all these people came to the rally because our summer camp helped to spread the word. The idea of radio announcements, the Black Panther newspaper, and word of mouth hadn't entered my mind. If only Cecile could see what we'd done, and Pa and Big Ma. They put the young people's presentations on first, before all of the speeches and the musicians and the adult poets. Our play was awkward, with Sister Pat following us around with the microphone, but we continued on as if we'd rehearsed it that way. The first time Janice Engton heard her voice boom out over all those loudspeakers, she jumped back. She soon overcame her amplified voice and proved a bigger ham than Vonetta on her showiest and crowiest days. Janice brandished her silver-capped gun at us tired and scared runaway slaves more than Sister Pat's script had called for. All I knew was the crowd liked it, and that was enough for Harriet Tubman, who proclaimed, "Either you want to be free or you want to be scared slaves." She was supposed to have said, "I haven't lost a passenger yet." The crowd went crazy, and Janice soaked it up. Eunice kicked her sister the way I sometimes had to put Vonetta in her place. It worked. Janice stopped waving her silver cap shooter at us and went on with the play as Sister Pat had written it. After Harriet Tubman freed the slaves, Hirohito and the boys showed off their karate kicks and chops and jujitsu moves. Eunice, Janice, and Beatrice changed into their matching African print head wraps and dresses sewn by their mother. I was certain Vonetta would be eaten up with jealousy after Janice's loud, dramatic performance was soon to be followed by her dancing in that cute matching outfit. Instead, Vonetta had been awfully quiet while we waited for our turn to go on stage. I feared the worst with Vonetta's sunken mood. This had happened just before the tip-top-tap disaster. A quiet Vonetta was a scared Vonetta. That meant I'd have to dance her part, or in this case, say her part if her eyes bugged out and her mouth didn't open. Then afterward, I'd have to there her for the next 2 weeks. "Vonetta, you ready?" She nodded. If I didn't make her talk, we were doomed. What's that, Vonetta? Another nod. Now I was mad. Mad because this was the same Vonetta who had stubbornly wanted to sing Dry Your Eyes before all of these people. This was the same Vonetta who had recited We Real Cool until it drove Cecile to a cussing fit. This was Vonetta who had said, We should do this poem. And as usual, I would have to go out there and finish the mess Vonetta started. Vonetta, don't make me kick you. Better not, she said. Good. At least her mouth opened and two words came out. And I'm ready for your information. I'm ready, Fern piped up. I'm ready like Freddy. I'm ready and steady. I know a boy in my class named Eddie. Eddie Larson, but Larson doesn't go with ready and steady. Then she barked, arf, arf. Vonetta and I looked at each other, then at Fern. Vonetta said, Fern, what are you talking about? Fern smiled and sang, I saw something. Then she clapped it out like we were still on the East Bay bus. The karate boys had run off the platform while the crowd still cheered. I hadn't been paying attention because I was worried about Vonetta. But when Hirohito ran over, I said, that was really neat. Sister Pat pushed us to the stage and we marched out before all those people. Vonetta was supposed to introduce us and say the name of our poem and that our mother wrote it. But I could see her eyes growing big and her face ashen. I whispered two things I knew would get her going. I said, Hirohito's watching and Janice hopes you trip. Vonetta's face ripened to a peach. She grabbed the microphone pole like Diana Ross, stepped out in front of us, her supremes, then cleared her throat. I birthed the Black Nation by our mother, Nzila the Black Poet. All the power to all the people. The crowd roared and waved their fists. Maybe they carried on because she was a little girl making big sounds. Maybe they cheered for Nzila, who was now a known political prisoner. To Vonetta, they cheered for her, and she was set to show and crow. Vonetta. I birthed a Black Nation. From my womb, Black creation. Spill forth to be stolen, shackled, dispersed. Me. I dispatched Black warriors, raged against unjust barriers, to find the Black and strong had fallen, divided, deceived, overcome. Fern. Black oceans separate us. Tortured cries. Songs of Black greatness still echo in my canal. Vonetta, Fern, and me. Hear the reverberation of a stolen Black nation, forever lost to foreign shores where thieves do not atone and Mother Africa cannot be consoled. All that was missing was Cecile to see and hear us recite her poem. I'm sure she wouldn't have appreciated Vonetta sprinkling black into her poem like pepper. But the crowd loved it, and we went along, following Vonetta's lead, throwing in the word black as she had. Following each other was easy. We'd been doing it for as long as we could all talk. Saying Cecile's words one after another felt like we were bringing her into our conversation instead of turning our voices on her like we had. When we finished, we were supposed to exit the platform, me first, Vonetta second, and Fern last. We'd walked off the stage and over to the wing. That was what I was certain we'd done. Then I turned and saw Fern still standing in the center of the stage. I went to get her, but Sister Pat was already walking out. Fern wouldn't leave. She said something to Sister Pat, who nodded and adjusted the microphone down to Fern's mouth. Then she left Fern alone on stage. The crowd quieted and waited, but Fern stood without saying a word. Again, I went to get little Fern, but Sister Makumbu grabbed my shoulder. Wait, Delphine. Let her. Sister Makumbu had no idea how hard it was for me to watch my baby sister stand alone before all of those people. They could laugh at her, shout at her to get off the stage, or boo her into tears. But Fern balled her fists, banged them at her side. And then she spoke. My mother calls me little girl, but this is a poem by Fern Gaither, not little girl. This is a poem for Crazy Calvin. It's called A Pat on the Back for a Good Puppy. She cleared her throat. Crazy Calvin says, off the pig. Crazy Calvin slaps everyone 5. The policeman pats Crazy Calvin on the back. The policeman says, good puppy. Crazy Calvin says, arf, 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 arf. Because I saw the policeman pat your back, Crazy Calvin surely did. Two things happened just then. Really, three things. First, the crowd went wild for Fern Gaither. Janice Engton folded her arms and told Eunice she didn't want to go on stage and dance after Fern had grabbed up all the applause. Second, Crazy Calvin backed away. I think he was searching for the best way to get out of the park, but he was surrounded by Black Panthers. They knew what Fern had said, even though it took Vonetta and me a little longer to really understand what Fern had said and seen, and what it meant. Luckily for Crazy Calvin, there were enough policemen to step in and get him out of the park. It's funny about Crazy Calvin. If he hadn't gone on and on about racist pigs, Fern would have never asked herself, what's wrong with this picture? I'm sure it had more to do with Miss Patty Cake and him telling her who she could love. I'm sure it had more to do with him telling her who she was. Fern had Crazy Calvin in her sights, and she got him with his own words. What's wrong with this picture? There was a third thing that happened just then, only I didn't know it at the time. Cecile told it to me in a letter a month later. And that thing, the third thing was, a poet had been born. It wasn't Longfellow, Cecile had written, but it was a running start. So, although the rally was still going strong, Vonetta, Fern, and I couldn't get down into the crowd fast enough once we had spotted Cecile. We weren't the hugging type, but we were all happy. We were happy Cecile had been released from jail, and happy she was there to see us on stage reciting I Birthed a Nation. Thanks to Vonetta, now people called Cecile's poem I Birthed a Black Nation. I had braced myself for her crazy anger at us for disturbing her poem like we disturbed her quiet, but she didn't mention one word about all the black we'd thrown into her poem. In fact, Cecile just seemed different after having been locked up. She even limited her disguise to her big shades. She was feeling so good in a way that I think only I could make out, that she even gave us compliments. Vonetta got hers at my expense. Cecile said, see that, Delphine? You need to speak up like Vonetta. Now that's how you recite a poem. She might as well have said Vonetta was Hollywood's Black Shirley Temple. Vonetta lived on Cecile's praise for the rest of the summer and into the next year. To Fern, Cecile said, who said you could write a poem? Fern said, I didn't write it, I said it. Surely did, Cecile said, beating her to it, and we all laughed. What Cecile didn't say was Fern's name. Fern didn't seem to notice, but I did. I waited for Cecile to give me my share of praise. I didn't need it heaped on like my sisters did, but I knew it would be good because mine would come last. For a change, I planned to roll around in it and grin like a dummy. But then some of the organizers of the rally swarmed Sister Nzila and Little Nzila. They fussed over Fern, telling her how brave and clever she was. The organizers had also made time for Nzila to speak of her unjust arrest, but Cecile waved her opportunity away. Y'all heard my daughters, she said, more tired than proud. They said it all for me. Vonetta, Fern, and I hugged Sister Mukumbu and Sister Pat and told them we had a great time at the People's Center summer camp. They praised our work, praised Fern's bravery, Vonetta's loud, strong voice, and my being a leader and a helper. They told Sister Nzila all about us and that they wanted us back next year. The rest of the rally was all the speeches about Huey Newton and Bobby Hutton. Cecile said she wasn't staying for that, even though she could have been the star of the day. She said, Y'all can stay and run around with your friends. Tomorrow you'll be on the plane to New York. Vonetta and Fern ran off with Janice and Beatrice. Eunice and I found a place to sit and share a bag of chips. I told her we would be flying to New York the next day. She asked if we were coming back, and I said I didn't know. I suggested we become pen pals and write each other letters once a month. That sounded okay to her. Neither one of us was really a talker or a run-around player, so we just sat there. Hirohito found us sitting and jumped into a karate pose.
Did you see me?
We saw you, Hirohito, Eunice said. It would have been better if you broke some boards like they do on TV. She demonstrated with a karate chop to a pile of air boards. He didn't really look at her. He looked at me.
Want to ride on my go-kart?
I didn't know how to be with Hirohito while Eunice was there. I just said no and looked at my sneakers. I felt my face growing warm. My feet were too big. Too big for a sixth grade girl. Hirohito, you let a girl on your go-kart? Your precious go-kart? I couldn't tell if Eunice was teasing him or mad at him.
Yeah, so?
You like Delphine. I hit her on the shoulder like she was Vonetta. She didn't seem to mind. Teasing Hirohito and making me feel silly seemed to provide Eunice with entertainment and satisfaction. She put her hand over her mouth to gasp.
I can't believe you, Delphine. You like Hirohito? You're just as bad as Janice and your sister.
This was the second time Eunice had gotten me, and both times had to do with Hirohito. I never had anyone over me like a sister or brother and didn't know how to answer back. I didn't want to deny it in case he liked me too, but I wasn't about to be the one to say it in words. I hadn't even said it to myself yet. Eunice wouldn't let up. She was finally enjoying herself.
Hirohito Woods, I can't believe you let a girl ride on your go-kart.
So?
I smiled without smiling like Cecile does. Besides, he could have said, I don't like her, or she's too tall, or she's too plain. He could have said what all the boys in my class said. I wouldn't like her if she were the last girl on earth. Instead, Hirohito said,
so?
Like, okay. Like it was okay to like Delphine. I said it too.
So?
B11. We told Cecile everything. About our excursion to San Francisco, the hippies, Chinatown. Vonetta told how the tall, blonde, white people took pictures of her like she was a movie star, which I could see Cecile didn't like one bit. Fern told how she saw Crazy Kelvin with two policemen just before the bus rounded onto the Bay Bridge. She gave us an earful about how Kelvin always said, racist pigs, but he let the policeman pat him on the back like he was the policeman's dog. To that, Cecile said, if you can see that, then you write poems all right. We asked her about being arrested and being a political prisoner and a freedom fighter. Cecile made it sound like it was no big deal. I've been fighting for freedom all my life. But she wasn't talking about protest signs, standing up to the man, and knowing your rights. She was talking about her life, just her, not the people. Vonetta, wanting more compliments, said, we put everything back just the way you like it. Talking about Cecile's workplace, the kitchen. I didn't expect gushing, but it would have been nice if she gave us more than the nod. We packed all of our things except for the clothes we'd wear in the morning. It was hard to believe 4 weeks had passed by so quickly. When Vonetta and Fern had gone to bed, I went into the kitchen to find Cecile hunched over her printer. Pieces of the machine lay out on the table. She had the screwdriver in her hand, putting it back together herself. Although I didn't hear the door swing open when I pushed it, she had and knew I was there. I called your father when I got out, she told me without looking up.
Delphine? Why didn't you tell him what happened?
I stood there, surprised, shocked. It didn't enter my mind that she would have wanted me to call Papa. We thought you were coming right back. She kept screwing in one of the rollers, still not looking at me directly.
I counted on you to call him. Tell him what happened. I at least thought you'd figure that out. You're the oldest, Delphine, the smart one.
She had just told me I was smart, and the disappointment reminded me she hadn't said one nice thing to me. Not one.
Papa would have made us come back to Brooklyn. He would have been mad because I didn't do what he said. Look after Vanetta and Fern. And then Big Ma wouldn't let a day pass without telling me for the rest of my life how you aren't nothing but Delphine. You let 7 days pass without calling your father? 7 days. That would have been looking out for Vanetta and Afua. You shouldn't have taken this all on yourself. You didn't have nothing to do with the police arresting me. I didn't have nothing to do with the police arresting me. They came. They arrested me along with the two Panthers they really wanted. And Louis's mother is going to say whatever she is going to say. That's just how it is. All you had to do was call your father. That was all.
My eyes stung. I was spilling over mad. I couldn't stop what I had to say, even if she stood over me and became my crazy mother mountain and knocked me down. I was spilling over.
I'm only 11 years old and I do everything. I have to because you're not there to do it. I'm only 11 years old, but I do the best I can. I don't just up and leave.
I was still on 2 feet. There was no sting on my jaw. My backside had not been touched. But I was ready for it. I closed my eyes because I figured the slap wouldn't sting as much when it did come. Instead, I heard metal on metal. I opened my eyes. The sound I heard was a screwdriver missing the groove, hitting the printer's metal innards. She laid the screwdriver on the table. I had nowhere to go, but I wanted to disappear. Finally, she nodded to the floor and said, "Sit." I did what she told me. There was a lot of silence, but then she spoke.
It was just me and my mother until I was 11.
I wasn't used to having her attention. Having her look at me and talk. All the while she spoke, she didn't lift her eyes from me.
A car hit her and she was gone. That was it. My aunt took me in to clean her house, watch her kids. I slept on a blanket on the floor in the kids' room for 5 years. I was 16 when she announced she was getting married. She said it wasn't good for a big gal like me to be in her house, seeing as she had a husband. She said in the long run she was doing me a favor. Then my mother's sister made me a sandwich I couldn't eat, gave me $20, and put me out. I slept in subways at night. During the daytime, I read Homer and Langston Hughes in libraries. I tried to hide in the stacks, but they always found me and shooed me out. When I didn't have 15 cents for the subway, I slept on park benches, wherever I could hide myself. Delphine, it's a hard thing to sleep on the streets. A hard thing for a grown man. A harder thing for a teenage girl, no matter how big and tall she is. At night, I talked to myself to stay awake. I said the poems of Homer and Langston Hughes. I liked the words. They comforted me. Their rhymes, their beats. They made a place for me. They kept me strong. But I was always hungry, and I had gotten sick. Your father found me on a park bench. He and his brother had a nice apartment on Herkimer Street. He fed me, gave me a bed to sleep on. I hadn't slept on a bed since I was 11 years old and my mother was alive. Louis never bothered me. Didn't ask me to do much but cook, sweep, wash his clothes. She paused. I had you the next year. 6 years from where you are now. I had Vanetta next. Both times his mother came up from Alabama and delivered you and Vanetta in that apartment. She and I couldn't get along, so she always went back south. Then I had the last one. That little one wanted out bad enough to come when she wanted to come. Early and fast. She was born on a Friday.
All I could do was lie on the kitchen floor and let her comb. She stopped for a minute and said,
You were there when she came.
I was?
I was down on the floor. You stroked my hair like I was a doll, but you didn't have any dolls. No toys. You said,
Don't cry, Mama. Don't cry.
I think that's the first time I heard you really speak. But when she came out of me, you didn't say a word. You took the dish towel hanging off the icebox handle and wiped off your sister.
I could hardly breathe.
Then Darnell walked in from school. He did everything else needed to be done.
Why couldn't I remember seeing Fern being born? Telling my mother not to cry. Wiping Fern off with the dish towel. Where were those flashes of memory?
Your life seems hard, Delphine. But it is good. It's better than what I could have given you.
Here was my mother telling me her life, who she was, how she came to be Cecile, answering questions I'd stored in my head from the time I realized she would not come back. Here she was telling me more than I could remember, understand, picture. Maybe I was too young to really take hold of it all, but for what seemed like the first time ever, all I could think about was my own self. What I lost, what I missed. That no one said, good Delphine. No one ever said thank you. Even after telling me all of this, I was still mad. Maybe I'd been mad all along but didn't have time to just be it. Mad.
Is it true what Big Ma says? That you left because you couldn't name Fern?
I took her silence as a yes. For a while she said nothing, so I guessed she was done talking. I started to get up. Then she said,
I could have taken you with me and left the other two. You have my mother's face. You didn't cry. You didn't want much. You didn't talk, but you understood. But I didn't have a penny in my pocket. I just knew I had to go. So I gave Vonetta a cookie. That was all she wanted anyway. I gave the baby milk and I... The picture flashed before me as it had many, many times. Put the doll baby in with Afua. The doll I asked Darnell to go to the store and get. I told you to be good and wait for Papa. Then I left.
She told me everything I wanted to know and too much. It was too much. I'd have to take it out one piece at a time to look at it. She said,
Did I leave because of a name? You'd have to be grown first before I explained. If I told you now, it would just be words.
She picked up her screwdriver and went back to working on her printer.
Be 11, Delphine. Be 11 while you can.
That was it.
In the middle of the night, I woke up.
Afua?
Afua.
Delphine, Vonetta, and Fern, get up out of that bed. Come on, y'all, it's time to go.
No one wanted to get out of bed. No one wanted to go. But Cecile stood in the doorway and called us one more time. Fern was the first to spring up.
Hey, that's my name. Our mother said my name.
Cecile rolled her eyes and left the room. Fern was a regular jumping bean.
She said my name. She said my name.
Vonetta couldn't take another excited minute of Fern jumping on the upper mattress. Big deal. She said my name, too.
Big deal to me, Fern said. She always says Delphine. She always says Vonetta. Today she said Fern, Fern, Fern.
She jumped in between each fern.
Fern, not a little girl.
Vonetta flung her pillow at Fern, but Fern wouldn't be quieted. I said, That's not your real name, the one she gave you.
It is, too.
It's not. We kept it up, Vonetta and I on the same side for a change.
Is, too.
Then I broke it by saying, Your name is Afua. I wasn't known for joking. That sobered them as much as Fern's name, which they both mouthed.
Afua.
Take that back, Delphine, Fern said.
My name's not Afua, it's Fern, Vonetta pointed at her.
Aha! Afua! Fooey! Chop suey! Little fooey! All over my shoey!
Fern turned red. This was the part where I was supposed to shut Vonetta up and take Fern's side. Instead, I said, get used to it. Your name is Afua, as in Delphine, Vonetta, and Afua. Fern balled her fingers into a fist and punched me in the stomach. Her hand was so little, I didn't say ow, to give her the satisfaction of knowing she caused me pain. I just said, go brush your teeth, Afua.
Later, Cecile said, why'd you tell her that? If I wanted her to know her name, I would have told her.
I couldn't tell if Cecile was really annoyed or if she was just fussing. I decided she was fussing and that I couldn't go through my life afraid of what my mother might do next. I shrugged and ate my cereal. Delphine, Vonetta, Afua, and Zila. Some names made up, some not. Did it matter what they really meant or where Cecile got them from? As long as she gave them to us and to herself. We spent the bus ride and the $2 taxi ride to the airport making fun of Afua. Once Cecile said, cut it out. That was the end of us teasing Fern outright. Still, Vonetta and my constant smirks erupted into snickers. Fern stayed mad. When we got to the airport, Cecile called Papa Collect. She turned her back to us and spoke to Pa for more than 15 minutes. Big Ma wouldn't be happy about the cost of the collect call, but I doubted Papa minded. While we waited for Cecile to finish speaking with Pa, a white man came by and said how cute my sisters and I were in our matching outfits. He still had film left over from his sightseeing trip and wanted to use the last of it to take a picture of us. Pretty girl, smile pretty, he said. I could tell he was a nice man, but Cecile put a stop to it while Vonetta adjusted her hairband, already posing for the cover of Jet. Cecile stood in front of us and said, they're not monkeys on display. The nice man tried to apologize, but Cecile wouldn't hear it. How'd you like it if some strange man came snapping pictures of your daughters? I felt bad for him, but I knew Cecile had to step in. Any mother would have at least done that. We sat in comfy waiting room seats without talking for almost half an hour. The hands on the big clock moved slowly. Fern nodded merrily like she was answering herself or singing. Kind of like Cecile tapping out beats with her pencil. Vonetta fiddled with her hairband or twirled her longest braid around her finger. I followed the janitor pushing his dry mop along the floor as people carrying travel bags danced around him or found seats. I stopped glancing up at the big clock or down at my Timex. I didn't have to. The queasiness churning inside told me it was time to go, and the boarding announcement was made over the loudspeaker. She said, go on, and we went. I expected Cecile to walk away, to cut through the terminal in man-sized strides as soon as we got up and stood on line. When I turned to see if she had gone, she was standing only a few feet away, looking straight at me. It was a strange, wonderful feeling to discover eyes upon you when you expected no one to notice you at all. I smiled a little and faced front to find something to do with myself. Vonetta and Fern both held onto their own ticket. I reached to take Fern's ticket, afraid she'd crush it the way she was holding it. She felt me reaching and pulled her hand away. We moved closer to the front of the line near the ticket taker. Fern balled both hands, banging her fists at her sides, her ticket now completely crumpled. Maybe she was afraid of the airplane ride and getting knocked around by those clouds. Maybe she didn't know what to do with her hands without Miss Patty Cake. Or she could have still been mad about all that Afua teasing. My first move was to comfort her. I went to reach out to Fern, but she bolted from the line, ran, and jumped on top of Cecile. Vonetta and I didn't hesitate.
We broke off from the line and ran over to hug our mother and let her hug us. How do you fly 3,000 miles to meet the mother you hadn't seen since you needed her milk, needed to be picked up, or were 4 going on 5, and not throw your arms around her whether she wanted you to or not? Neither Von Netta, Fern, nor I could answer that one. We weren't about to leave Oakland without getting what we'd come for. It only took Fern to know we needed a hug from our mother.
The end. You've been listening to One Crazy Summer by Rita Williams Garcia, narrated by C.C. Aisha Johnson. This book is copyrighted 2010 by Rita Williams Garcia. This recording is copyrighted 2010 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.